Welcome to the Food and Faith Podcast, conversations from the soil and around the table with your co-hosts, Sam Chamlin and Anna Woofenden. Welcome to the Food and Faith Podcast, episode one. We are excited to have numbers to put on our episodes, and we are really looking forward to sharing with you our guest today.
We are glad to welcome the Reverend Megan Snell, who is an ordained pastor in the United Church of Christ and is the founding pastor of Open Table Dinner Church in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
So people have been gathering on tables for thousands of years, breaking bread, praying, singing, being church together. But recently we've seen a renewal and surge of this as an expression of church here in the United States. So I wonder, Sam, what's your experience of dinner church?
Yeah, I had heard a lot about this movement through things like Christian food movement and things like that. And then we decided to try a liturgy of it at Keep Until. That's been the one experience that I've had of it. And the opportunity to put food at the center of that that worship space, not just the Eucharist, certainly that's important to us, but put the entire meal at the center of that and to open it up where everyone is able to participate in a way that I hadn't experienced before. It was really profound and really moving. And so this whole dinner church thing just took on sort of a whole new meaning for me and discovered that it's much bigger than I had ever anticipated. You've been a part of a couple of these, right, Anna?
Yeah, I years ago when Emily Scott was starting St. Lydia's Dinner Church in Brooklyn, I had the opportunity to worship with them and just really had my mind shifted around what it could look like to incorporate worship directly with food and the meal. And it certainly was something that we took into our work, the Garden Church, but I've also do worship with Common Ground in Western Mass and some other churches that are bringing people around the table and having liturgy at the table. And every time I've participated, I find that there's something profound about the explicit nature of bringing food and liturgy into the same space.
Yeah. So in our interview, we're going to talk to Megan about this a good bit, and just how there's a lot about this movement that feels sort of countercultural or going against the stream of sort of mainstream church, but how it works in some really important ways. And Megan does a fantastic job of describing that for us. And so we're going to let Megan tell that story. And so we invite you now to our interview with the Reverend Megan Snell.
We are so, so happy to have Reverend Megan Snell here on the podcast. I first had the pleasure of meeting Megan back, what year was that, Megan? Do you remember?
Was it 2015 when you were at the Center for Progressive Renewal Conference?
Yes, that's right. And then you came out to the Garden Church soon after that.
Yeah, 2016, I think I came out to the Garden Church.
So Megan, I was struck when I first met you about how you are so present to what the needs are of the church and curious, and also your authenticity and just the way that you're approaching ministry and church. And it's been so exciting to see what's grown since then. And we're really excited to learn about Open Table Dinner Church and hear some of your stories and your wisdom on this intersection of food and faith. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Because this movement is so rooted in place, tell us a little bit about your place and your geography, whether that's your human community, your natural community. Just tell us a little bit about where you are and what forms you, sort of what forms your neighborhood, the community, the people you're serving, and why you've done Open Table where you're at.
Yeah. So Open Table Dinner Church meets in Cambridge, Massachusetts, so just outside Boston, right over the Charles River. And where we meet is a fairly urban environment, but we find ourselves in a lot of these neighborhoods real close to where we meet are kind of these food desert spaces where there's not a lot of local grocery options for folks. So we find that some people are really having to travel quite a bit of distance to get to fresh produce and things like that. So that's kind of one feature of the area that we're in. Another feature is that we're in an area where people really appreciate knowing where their food comes from. These are folks who often like to hear about the backstory of where their food comes from, where it's grown, and how it nourishes their body. And so we find that people appreciate that at Open Table, everything we serve is vegan and is generally fairly locally grown and in season and fresh.
So can you tell us, so I know, I know a little bit and I've been following you online and your newsletter, but could you tell our guests, like, if they were to show up on at Open Table in our church, what would they experience on a typical week?
Yeah, so if folks showed up at Open Table, they would find themselves greeted with a friend and a job, to be frank. So folks walk in and they're immediately greeted by people who have been there for a while and are ready to welcome them into the community. And in order to avoid the awkwardness that comes with, you know, entering into new church spaces, we often give people something to do right away. So whether that be setting the table or popping into the kitchen to stir some pots of soup or chop some vegetables, we like to get people involved right away so that they can really start to co-create the community and really take ownership over the space from the moment that they get there. So then what happens is folks gather around and we circle up to share light with one another and to invoke the spirit in the space. And then we share communion bread with each other, kind of our first moment of eating together is to share in this sacrament. And so we pass the bread from one to another. And this is homemade bread that's kind of infamous in our area of the country. You know, folks come to Open Table for this particular communion bread. And so, so we share that bread and we really take it seriously that that bread is delicious and is the bread of life and is nourishing. And then we sit down at table and we spend, you know, a good amount of time just talking with one another and getting to know one another over the meal. And before we sit down at table, we learn about the meal. So we learn about the foods that are in it and what it does for the body and how it nourishes us. And we really take seriously that when people come to Open Table, we want them to be fed mind, body, and spirit. And so that includes food that really fuels them and helps them to feel connected to the earth and creation.
So I'm curious about that. You talked about all the food being local and then doing the work of educating your people, those who are there, about that. So I'm curious about sort of how you've cultivated local sources and your relationship with farmers and growers. Can you tell us a little bit about sort of how that process has worked, how you've sought these people out, and then sort of how they understand their participation in Open Table? Like, are they excited that their produce is going to a church, or is that not part of the conversation?
Yeah, so we had a founding food minister, Rebecca, who unfortunately passed away this past summer. And she did a lot of the work of kind of starting to build up relationships in the area and to build up our food networks here. And then since her death, a good friend of hers named Lauren has stepped up as our new kitchen witch who does all the magic in the kitchen. And so she actually lives just over the border in Connecticut. And so she is, you know, working down there. She works at a co-op when she's not cooking for us. And so she's cultivating these relationships with folks that are able to provide us with fresh produce. And she's actually starting to do a lot of the growing of the food herself. So we're getting a lot of in-house stuff coming up.
That's fantastic. And it's cool. And I love the idea of really educating folks on the food that is there. And certainly there's value in just eating food, but there's additional value in talking about what that food is and how it does stuff for us. Why do you think this works? Why do you think Dinner Church is kind of catching on in your area and in other areas? Because in a lot of ways, it goes against some prevailing narratives that we hear in church life about how people kind of want sort of a condensed, low impact, low responsibility experience of church. And you're going in completely the opposite direction, where not only do you have to come and worship and do all the things that are associated with that, but you've got to set the table and you've got to prepare food. And I suspect that you're there longer than an hour. So in the face of all these trends, you're thriving in a situation that goes against all those trends. So why does Dinner Church work?
Yeah, that's a super interesting question. So it is true that we are there for longer than an hour. we find that folks really aren't looking to get in and out particularly quickly. When they settle into the dinner church experience, they're ready to be there for a good hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes. And then they also come early to help set up, and they stay, you know, 30 minutes late to help with the cleanup. So we find that people really like to linger and like that this is something that comes at the end of their day. So it's not the beginning. They're not looking at a full day of schedule. This is the end of their day. They've been at work all day. They're ready to just kind of sink into this experience. And we think that dinner church works fairly well because we're really going for this holistic, you know, whole mind, body, and spirit approach to doing worship together. And we find that, you know, we're eating together. And so we're having that fellowship component. And we're also worshiping together through our stories and our scripture reading, reflection, and praying. And so we're getting the worship piece. And then we find that we're doing a lot of pastoral care moments in the process of cleaning up. You know, we have these side-by-side activities of washing dishes together, and things come out, you know, in those moments that maybe folks would be hesitant to bring up in other times. And so it's almost this kind of one-stop full church experience that we have on these Tuesday nights, where we're really getting to have people worshiping together, fellowshipping together. We get pastoral care in, and we really get to know people on a deep level. And I think that that's resonating with folks, that they want that relational church more than the kind of come in, sit in a pew, face forward. I mean, that totally works for some folks. And I experience that as really nourishing for myself spiritually to go into more traditional brick and mortar churches. But there's something about what we're doing at dinner church that is missing from a lot of people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and that's super fascinating, and certainly reflects kind of a narrative that is happening. And so I've noticed that you participate in denominational life. You've written a lot. You're active in your conference and in your association. And so I wonder, sort of, the presence of Open Table, like, how has that influenced sort of the wider church culture of which you're a part? Have you been able to sort of say, hey, look, there is a different way of thinking about church, and it's not sort of a lesser impact church that makes a difference, but maybe it is in some ways a higher impact and a higher investment kind of a way of thinking about church life.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been really interesting. We've had a lot of support from other churches in our area. Folks have been inviting us to come and do dinner church at their churches with their congregations. And so we've kind of been able to spread some of this model to other folks, and they've been really receptive and happy to learn about what we're doing. And what I've found is that people really are excited about, you know, this new thing of dinner church. And we always kind of, when folks talk about this new and innovative piece, we kind of say, you know, this is actually the oldest way of doing church. And so we don't do anything particularly innovative at all. We are actually, you know, kind of stripping away hundreds of years of church that's been built on top of this and going all the way back to Acts, back to meeting around a table together. And so we find that when we go back to that, you know, core of it, that meeting at table, that people really resonate with that and find themselves being filled up by that.
So I'm curious, there, you know, people in your denomination and looking outside get really excited about this new idea. And I really appreciate how you bring out, like, this is just how it's, this is church. This is how it's been done over the years. I'm curious, who's showing up at those tables? And are there people that you were surprised? Is it who you expected? Are they the people that might show up to the brick and mortar? Or, you know, this is obviously a bit of a leading question. You know, who's there, and what surprised you, and what magic have you seen happening by gathering together to be church in a form that is maybe not the more accessible brick and mortar forms that are available right now?
Yeah. So it kind of runs a spectrum in terms of who we're getting at our services. We find that some folks are coming who are every Sunday morning church attenders. They love church so much, and this is kind of a supplement to what's already been going on for them, and they want to add this piece in. This has been the missing piece for them. So we have some folks like that, who were their second or even third church in their life. And then we have some folks on the opposite end of the spectrum who have been extremely harmed by church in the past and who are really finding themselves looking for a spiritual community that will affirm them and will not cause them spiritual harm. And so we have folks who are coming who have this background of significant wounds by church. And then we've got some folks, you know, we have kind of another crowd who are just kind of seeking for the first time and may not have had, you know, harmful experiences with church in the past, but are really looking to explore, you know, what any kind of spiritual community might look like for them. And then we have other folks who are seminary students and are looking for a space where they can, you know, be in worship and not be leading. And other clergy who say, you know, this is a Tuesday night church, so finally they can go to church and be able to experience it and not have to lead as they do on Sunday mornings. So we have really quite a variety of folks who come.
Digging in a little more in that, what is it, the demographic look like as far as people's physical hunger? Are there people that might not have dinner otherwise that are there? Is it, are people more coming for the church or the food or some of both?
You know, I think at this point, most people are coming for the church and appreciating that the food is an integral part of that. Mm-hmm. And so we sometimes have folks who come in who this is definitely one of their, you know, one of their only meals that day. And that's, you know, something that we take really seriously, that we want to be making sure that each meal is something really nourishing and something that'll really fuel people for quite a while. And we always send home leftovers. So if people come hungry or if they are just in a rush and have a busy week, they are always sent out the door with, you know, some extra bread and some extra leftovers of whatever the meal is that day.
So pivoting a bit, I know that one of your commitments in being a church that's body, mind, and spirit is to really look at mental health issues in church. And I'll just witness that I really appreciate the way that you have been a vocal advocate for talking about mental health in the church online, and I know in other settings. So how do you see that both as part of your ministry personally and the work of Open Table? And how does that fit into this question of food and faith and wholeness in body, mind, and spirit?
Yeah, so I think that this idea of being whole, body, mind, and spirit, you know, we feel that that's rooted down in scripture. You know, it's rooted down in Luke and chapter 10 and loving the Lord with all your heart and your mind and your soul, your strength, and that your whole self goes into this experience of worship and God and this experience of being faithful. And so we see church as this place where we can really really nurture all these parts of the human experience and really be a place where we can affirm and lift up and build up these parts of people's lives. And so that, you know, leads us to being a dinner church where we are nourishing the body as well as the spirit through worship, and that all of these pieces come together and interconnect. And that same rootedness in mind, body, and spirit wholeness is what leads me to my ministry around mental illness in the church. And so I've really found a passion and a call to be outspoken about my own experiences with mental illness. You know, I was serving a church a few years ago, and I preached a sermon, and it was a lengthy one for me. It was about 25 minutes. And in that 25-minute sermon, I talked about depression for 2.5 minutes. And after that sermon, there was, you know, a receiving line that lasted 45 minutes. It was, you know, just folks wanted to stay and linger. And they were telling me that that was the first time they'd heard the word depression from the pulpit, that was the first time they'd really seen or heard their own lived experience from a pulpit position. And so that, you know, that was really eye-opening to me, that even talking about it from a position of, you know, this is my own lived experience, for even just 2 minutes out of a 25-minute sermon made such a huge impact on people's lives and ability to be their whole selves in church. And so I see my own story and sharing my own experiences as an invitation for other people to share their experiences, and kind of a way to make this vulnerability and authenticity safe for people to do in these spiritual communities. And so that's, you know, the same kind of idea about wholeness, mind, body, and spirit. It's what leads us to do dinner with our dinner church and leads me to do preaching and teaching about mental illness in church as well.
So we have we hope to have a variety of listeners on this podcast, but I wonder if you could speak particularly to those who are in church settings or faith community settings. What do you wish that pastors and rabbis and congregations would know about how to be not just friendly, but be able to be proactive about being safe and whole places, particularly around mental illness? What's your charge or your call? Like, if you had a group of people and you could say, you're the leaders in your faith communities, this is what you should be doing. Are there some things that you would want to say to them?
Yeah. You know, there's so many things. I think the biggest message that I would hope that faith leaders can take away is to reduce their fear about mental illness in church. I think that a lot of the things that we say are either driven out of fear or kind of a carelessness when we use certain language like crazy or insane in our daily speak within the church, and when we neglect to pray for people who might be experiencing anxiety or depression or mental illness. And I think that there's just a desire that I have to reduce some fear and let people experience a little bit more openness about what it means to realize that there are people in their congregation already who are living with mental illness and who are living each day with depression or anxiety or anything else. And for people to really realize that those people are already there, they're not an other group, they're not an outsider group, they're already in the congregation and they're looking for ways to be their whole selves and to be affirmed within that setting. And so I think I'd really hope to encourage people to do more listening and more conversation with people, to find out stories that can help them to reduce their fear, and then also to realize that these folks are already there, and to see mental illness ministry within the church as a crucial part of caring for people who are already there and welcoming in people who are not.
And what I hear just as you talk about this, you simply peeled back the realities that are present in so many churches. And so that's what I hear. It's just like, no, this has always been here. And yet there's a safe space to talk about it. We can be our authentic selves, and that God has something to say about that. So just to hear you talk about that, as someone who also has had bouts with mental health and, you know, difficult circumstances, I'm just so grateful that these places exist, and to see that there are other places being created where we can be who we really are. So yeah, we're coming. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I would just add to that I think what I find really interesting is every time that I preach or write or speak about mental illness in the church, I get all these messages from clergy who are saying, you know, I have depression or I have anxiety, and I'm just too afraid to disclose that to my congregation. And I think that that's really a common experience for faith leaders, that I hope that folks can begin to realize that there are ways to disclose pieces of your own experience and lived experience without asking the congregation to take care of you. And that there are really, there's a way to be open and transparent without, you know, I think it's Nadia Bolz-Weber who talks about, you know, preaching from your scars and not your wounds. And I think that's really, you know, that's applicable in this situation, but also just allowing clergy folks to take a little bit of a step in being authentic with their congregations in this regard.
Well, thank you for saying that and for creating space for many of us, yeah, who have wrestled with this and continuing to be a voice for that. So we're getting down towards the end of it. We like to ask sort of a two-pronged question, and if there's one way you want to lean with this, have at it. Just sort of, is there a place where you see concern? But maybe the question you want to answer is, what brings you hope? At the end of the day, where are you hopeful? For where you are, for where the church is going, for the messages that are out there. So just want to hear a good word.
Yeah. So, you know, in this nearly Pentecost post-Easter season, I mean, what brings me hope is resurrection, and that I see that in scripture and that I see that every day in the lives of people around me. So one story from dinner church that brings me this hope in the resurrection is that we gathered for the first time. So every month we have queer dinner church on the second Tuesdays of the month. And so this is a dinner church just for LGBTQ folks. And this started in the wake of the shootings at Pulse nightclub in Orlando. And we just said, you know, we've got to do dinner church just for the LGBTQ community to gather and be in a safe space together. And so at that dinner church, while people were just eating, we decided it's got to be comfort food that night. So people were eating mashed potatoes and macaroni and just good food for the soul. And they were eating all this food together. And one person said, I just wish we could do this all the time. I wish I had this space all the time. And so we said, all right, let's do it every month. And so at that space now, you know, a year and a half later, at a queer dinner church meeting, an individual who'd been coming to our church for a couple months came in, and it was the first time that they put a different set of pronouns on their name tag mm-hmm. than what they had before. And so this space that was this safe space after the Pulse nightclub shootings became this safe space a year and a half later for this person to be their whole self. And so we really see our dinner church as a place where resurrection stories are happening as well.
That's so, so beautiful. And I get a little choked up thinking about how needed those places are. And, you know, I remember after that shooting, there was a lot of reflection on how nightclubs had been able to be a communal safe space for the queer community. And celebrating that and also lamenting that church so often hasn't been that. So yeah. to hear that story about church being able to be that safe space, that seems like the work of resurrection in the world. Seems like maybe what we should be doing. Well, we would love for our listeners to be able to connect with you and with your church. So could you let us know, give us your website, social media, and if people are in your area, if they want to show up, where should they go?
Yeah, so we are on the web at opentabledinnerchurch.org, and we are also on Facebook at that same Open Table Dinner Church search. And we meet right off of Harvard Square at 1555 Mass Ave in Cambridge. And so anytime anybody's in the area, you can come check us out on Tuesday nights, the first, second, and third Tuesdays. And if you want to connect with me directly, it's Pastor Megan at opentabledinnerchurch.org.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your ministry. Thank you for your work in the world. Thank you for continuing to show us the way forward of how to be church. And we look forward to continuing the conversation.
Thanks.
Thanks so much, Megan.
Thanks for listening to the Food and Faith Podcast. Our collaborators are Wake Forest University School of Divinity, Plainsong Farm, and The Keep Until. And music is by Paul Diemer. Follow along and keep up to date with the podcast on Facebook at Food and Faith Podcast, Twitter and Instagram at Food and Faith Pod, or on our website at foodandfaithpodcast.org.